Good morning, everyone. I'm Betty Ann Zetz, and I'm a member of the Tradition 5 group in Woodland Hills, which is the best group in the world. And I want to say hello to our sister group in Cairns, Australia. I'm the Al-Anon that forced the alcoholic to make a free decision. And I don't know about you this morning, but I'm on California time. I think it's 6, isn't it? Or 7. I mean, I just stayed up all night talking to Burl and Chip and everybody. Well, I did most of the talking. But all of a sudden I realized, you know, I think I better go to bed and sleep fast, right? But isn't it funny how we all dress up in the mornings? I mean, 10 o'clock in the morning, we're all dressed up. I mean, I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I expect to come down in my Al-Anon bathrobe. And that bathrobe consisted of coffee stains and, you know, I used to pull it in certain places and itch and do all that kind of stuff. Mary Ann Turner always talks about she retired hers. But before I get started, there's some people here that I really want to thank, and I'd like to have Leo come up here. When you thank an alcoholic, I mean, that's really being humble. excuse me. In an AA convention, right? Watch it, guy. I'd like to present to even Leo. I was chairman of the San Fernando Valley Convention. I know what it's like to have to meet speakers and pick them up and be part of their lives for a weekend when they don't want you to be part of their life. But I'd like to present to Eva and to Leo, for being such wonderful people and good examples of what AA and Al-Anon is to me today in this great fellowship, a pen and ink that says celebrate the gift, and that's what I'm going to talk about today, the gift. Thank you, Eva. Thank you. Wait later. All right, Leo. Hey, this is loose this morning, right? This is loose. But I really want to thank Ann and her husband Bud and for asking Bob and I. They asked me. Bob just came along. Isn't that wonderful? It's so nice to just drag that alcoholic to an AA meeting instead of dragging him out of Harris in Reno off that 21 table. You know? And I thought for sure that when they called security, that they were going to throw him out of Harris and off that table and off that from that VO, they threw me out. So, Annie, you guys, you know, you got me this morning. You can't throw me out. That's it. I'm up here. Terry and Carrie. Sound like Bob Newhart's show? You know? Daryl and Daryl? It's so funny because when I come south, I start talking like you. And, all of a sudden I start, you know, I come back home and all the girls that I sponsor, the women I sponsor, say to me, you sound strange. Where have you been? Texas again? You know, I want to thank Ann, and it was really great because last year she asked me a year in advance. I mean, for an Al-Anon, you know, that's, you know, alcoholics, they ask you the night before, and then you wait 24 hours and it changes. Right? Yeah. These girls say to me, she goes, I don't know what I'm going to do. He threatened that he's going to leave me. I said, you can never get rid of a drunk. They always show up. But I think the grace of it is that of saying grace that we're all together this morning and that I'm not out there looking for Bob in all the wrong places. You know, and Gracie and David are here, which are very, very instrumental in my program when I moved from Reno to Texas and spent a couple years in Texas, in Dallas. And they were very instrumental in us, not only of bringing the steps to us, to our group that we belong to, but also in name for the example of service and Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And we've learned a lot of lessons, Bob and I have. You know, I love an alcoholic. I'm blessed by alcoholism in my life, which I really didn't want to believe that before. But I'll tell you something that's really little God. You know, we talk about God's coincidence. I'm not the Sunday morning speaker, but I'll tell you something. I've been so graced the last 19 years. And, you know, they do that down south. They give their sobriety date. I give my sanity date this morning. I was like insane. I can't believe it. But, you know, last month, October 21st, my son's 18th birthday, I celebrated 19 years in this fellowship. And, you know, that's the only thing that I've ever done consistently in my life is go to Al-Anon. You know, and I go to Al-Anon a lot. I do a lot of stuff in Al-Anon, and I go to a lot of AA meetings, and I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I work the four column and the four step, but One of the things that really happened to us yesterday, I mean, we flew out here and we got here, and what a beautiful area. I mean, it's just absolutely a beautiful area. But one thing that's really special that happened to us, I mean, is that there's three things, those spiritual coincidences that happened. We took a ride and we went off, and I hope you have a long tape, Terry, but we took off and yesterday morning we wanted to go see your area. And anyway, we were coming back, and I stopped at an information booth because we needed a map. You know, we were kind of a little bit tired. Stopped at this information booth, and this lady went in there, and of course, you know, big mouth from California, you know, we're from L.A., and show us, you know. And so she said, well, you got to go to this little town called Seaside. She said, you like that little town. So, okay, cool, you know. And I said, I also want to go to Eden House or Eden Gardens or whatever, and because I like museums and old stuff. That's why I'm here. I'm an old soul in a young body, that's it, which is expanding. Because I'm just so well. We drove over there and went to Seaside, and we got out of the car, and of course, you know, I'm telling Bob this, it's like Eva and Leo, it's so cute when they call you, you know. Eva calls, and Leo's in the background. And I said, I ask questions, right, to Eva. And so she answers the question. I can hear in the background he's giving her an alternative answer. You know, like I'll say, well, what time does it start? And she'll say 10, and he'll say, no, 11, you know. But anyway, we go into this Seaside, you know, village and all that, and we're looking around, and Bob is hungry, you know, and I'm not. So, you know, I want to shop. I want to get rid of him. Good, go feed him. I'm going to go shop. And we went through this little shop and brought a hat and did all this, and I looked through there, and I saw this young woman that had a little black hat on, and she had a little tummy, and I looked through there, and a nice-looking guy sitting behind her in this really nice shop, this body shop. Not that kind of body shop, like Ann talked about last night. But anyway, I thought of that too, Ann. We can relate. Anyway, I said, let's go in there. And we went in there, and just by chance, we, you know, big mouth from L.A., started talking to her, she said, well, we're from L.A., and I said, oh, really? I said, well, how'd you guys meet? And she goes, at a bar. And we said, we did too. And these are normie people, we think, right? And we're just telling our life story immediately. And anyway, she kind of looked over at her husband. He looked at her, and she looked at me, and she said, what are you doing here in town this weekend? I said, well, we're at a conference at Fort Walton Beach. She goes, oh, really? I said, yes. I went, you're not a friend of Bill Wilson, are you? And she goes, yes, I am a friend of Bill Wilson, and so is my husband. Now, see, that gives me chills. How could that happen? Only God's kids meet God's kids, like Chuck Chamberlain talked about. Only God's kid meets God's kids. And you know what? She left her company, I'm still in L.A., but she left her shop this morning to be here. Linda, God bless you. Yeah, see? She's here this morning. She said, that's an alcoholic for you. They'll go to any lengths. But, you know, those are the special things that have happened to us, you know. And then last night, talking to the guys, and they were, you know, that are in the Air Force, and you know, because you have bases around here, you know, and I was raised with that. You know, I was raised as an Air Force brat, we call them. And I didn't find out until I was a teenager that my father's name was the redneck. You know, I thought that was a nice word. But, you know, it's just the grace of being able to be part of a worldwide fellowship, as the women said today, that is a privilege. And, you know, in our opening in our handbook, it says that we've been privileged to enjoy. And that's what we're doing. We've been privileged to enjoy. You know, and I didn't get here because I was all there. You know, I didn't wake up one morning and say, geez, it's so wonderful out, I think I'll go to Al-Anon, you know. Bob didn't wake up one morning and say, gosh, Betty Ann's so wonderful, I think I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, but you know, I was born in Chicago, and I was born, you know, in Oak Park, and my father was stationed at O'Hara when it was an Air Force base. And I was talking to those guys last night, and my dad's 71 years old and sober on his own today, but without any help from Alcoholics Anonymous or anything else, on his own will. And, you know, that third step works for me, you know, self-will, getting rid of self-will and free will and being able to be into God's will. But I can remember living in that little trailer, and my mother would go to work, and my dad came from a hillbilly family. Now they call him, you know, country western. He was a country western singer, the hillbilly singer. Now they call him, you know, country western singers. But he was a hillbilly. You know, my last name was Yoakum. That's why I got married. I had to change that name fast. You know, but I didn't know I was raised in a poor family either. You know, you didn't know that. Like Annie talked about last night. Annie talked about her wonderful, normal family. Her father was an engineer, and they traveled and all that. But what happened to Annie? See, something happened to her during those travels and moving that made her, you know, who she is today. You know, and that terrible, you know, liability that we think turns into being an asset here. You know, really turns into being an asset. Ask my kids about that. But we lived in this little trailer, and I can remember my father used to do those things to my mother and things so he could go out and drink. He'd start a fight with her when he'd get off the base. And then the trailer, and she'd be begging him not to go drink at the little corner bar in Des Plaines. And he'd do that. He'd go drink at that bar. And my mother and thing would cry, and then eventually what happened is she'd ask me, and I got big enough, and she'd ask me to go to the bar and get my father out of the bar. And, you know, alcoholism, as it says in the big book, is cunning, powerful, and baffling. And it's an insidious illness, you know. I love my father. I idolized my father. I looked up to him, you know. And but Annie talked about it last night again. You know, looking for love, you know, from someone else, depending on someone else for our happiness, or looking for love or that validation from a parent. You know, that's why that liability again turned into being an asset for me. You know, I tell my kids every day I love them. I might not like you, but I love you today, you know. But I remember one night my father and mother had a big fight, and he struck her, you know, and I was just really surprised. He struck her, and he went to that bar, and her nose was bleeding, and she sent me over there, and I went to the bar and tried to get him out of the bar to come home, that little trailer, and he said no, he wasn't going to do that. And he conned me into staying there, and that's when it set up that guilt, those guilt feelings inside of me. But that happened a lot, you know, and as the progression of the disease of alcohol happens, and then the progression of Al-Anonism happens within us, because I started protecting my mother, I started defending my mother, I started lying, I started cheating, I started stealing, doing all the things the alcoholic does, except I never crossed that fine line, you know. I wish I could drink. I throw up, get crazy, you know. But I think the impact in my life with living with my father and his drinking, and like Ann talked about, her parents didn't drink, but she had the same reactions that I had. And even normal people have problems, you know, but at least we have a place to go. We have a place that is such a blessing thing for us to go and to share. And but what happened is that one night my mother didn't come home from work, you know, and I was in that little trailer. It was all dark in that little trailer. And I was a latchkey kid before it became popular. But that's what you did. When you're in the Air Force, you stayed in your place, and nobody knew what was going on. I remember my Uncle Jack. God bless his soul. My Uncle Jack thing was a real bad drinker. He was the youngest of 13 children, my dad's brothers and sisters. And they lived in a trailer just down from us. And I remember my Aunt Florence and how wonderful she was to me. But she had her problems with my Uncle Jack, you know. I remember him drinking and getting out of hand or whatever. But but also drinking portrayed something to me, too, is that when we'd go up north to Wisconsin, up to my grandparents' house, and all my aunts and uncles would get together with their guitars and their mandolins, and they'd all start singing, and they'd start drinking that moonshine down in the basement, you know, that my grandfather made. You know, because he was from Kentucky. I mean, you know, he'd smoke those corncob pipes and chew tobacco and spit it out in that spit tune. I mean, you know, us kids knew our place. It was in the attic looking down, getting all the, you know, through that vent, you know, that made marks on your face. But, because I loved it. It was wonderful until about 1 o'clock in the morning. And then things started happening. Guns started going off. And everybody scattered. And all of us kids went to bed right away, you know. And, but that used to be the freedom for me, is to go up north and be with my grandmother. Because my grandmother would bring me into her bed, and she would, you know, and she had these big down comforters, goose down comforters that she'd made herself. And just like in the raffle, you know, I saw that quilt out there, and that's what she'd do. She'd do those rag quilts from all the rags, you know. And she had an odd house, and she never had indoor plumbing until just before she died. You know, they worked the land, they did the wood, and I mean, you know, I was raised with a lot of value, a lot of value. You know, I had no idea, you know, that my father's drinking and my uncle's drinking and what it did to this family, you know, what it did to my mother, my grandmother. But she'd pull me in that bed and she'd read the Bible to me and she'd tell me that everything's going to be okay, honey. And you know, that's what happened in Al-Anon. You told me everything's going to be okay. We're here with you. You'll never have to be alone again from that first meeting. And so what I did is that I used to pray, please God, you know, let Daddy come home, you know, and let him be sober, whatever. And, you know, he'd come home and it'd start again. And my mother would start again. And but this one night, no one came home, and it was dark, and about 7 o'clock at night, I went over to the little trailer park, Adam and Eve, the people that own the trailer park in Des Plaines. Adam and Eve, can you believe that? They had this beautiful daughter who was a model in Chicago. And they came over, and they said, we'd like you to come over and have dinner with us. We see your parents aren't home, Betty Ann. And I said, well, no, I better not do that. You know, I was very disciplined. You know, my dad used to come in the middle of the night, check my fingernails, do all that kind of stuff, inspection. But I went over there anyway. I don't know why I did that, but thank God I did. Because when I went over there, there was about an hour later, and I was eating steak, the first time I'd never eaten steak in my life. You know, I knew nothing about, you know, foods or anything else. I had no charms. I was not a lady. But I was just a tomboy kid, you know. But my two aunts, my uncle came over and told me something that really changed the destiny of my life. I think that really brought me here to this fellowship to be healed. And it's healed by people like Eva. But what happened to me is that they came into that room and they had that look on their face. And you know when they have that look on their face, there's something wrong, especially when you're a kid. You know, you have that intuitiveness. You know what's going on in that house, you know. And they told me, they said, Betty Ann, we need to talk to you. And they told me that my mother had just been killed. And what I found out many years later, because that's all they told me, they just said that your mother was coming home from work and she was hit by a train. And I didn't learn it until I, many, many years later, that my mother was 9 months pregnant with twin boys. I just thought she was heavy. And my mother was rushing home. And I realized that after I got into the program and did an in-depth fifth step and a fourth step. But what happened is that she was rushing home this one night, and then her last day at work, and to drop a lady off to go take the train into Chicago. My mother stopped at the train station, and they said that she went through the light, which my father denies, and a train hit her, and they found her. She went through the front window of that 49 Ford, and ended up out onto a big field, and dismangled, and she was killed instantly. And, you know, indirectly, she was killed because of the disease of alcoholism. Because my aunt let it slip that she was rushing home probably to make dinner for my dad. Because maybe he won't go out and drink that night. We all know that. We Al-Anons can identify with that. The things that we did for love, you know. The things we did, meaning for the alcoholic, you know. And, you know, it's really funny because that brought us really closer together for a while, you know. But then I started resenting my father and resenting the fact that he remarried again. We moved out to California. My father got stationed at McClellan. I had to leave all my family. It was really scary, you know, it was really scary. When I moved out to California, they didn't have sidewalks. Like, weird, you know, didn't have sidewalks. And I went through high school, as most kids do, and they that come from alcoholic homes, or even normie homes, I realize today. But I went through high school, and then I just, you know, skipped 2 grades. And my son tells me, you know, when they look at my pictures when I was in high school, they said, Mom, you were a geek, you know, you were really weird. But I acted out. You know, kids of alcoholics, I think, act out. And I acted out, and I was the class clown, and eventually I became the first female clown in the United States that ever had her face copyrighted, you know. And I just, I acted out, you know, because what was going on in my house, my father remarried again. I have 5 half-sisters and brothers who really need this fellowship. They really need it. But, you know, Al-Anon is only for people that want it, not for people that need it, you know. And anyway, I got out of high school, and I thought, what am I going to do? Because I went to my dad to try to get money for college, you know, from my late mother, and because my aunts told me that there was some money for me to go to school, and he said no. He drank that money away. And I thank God for the steps. You know, I really thank God for the steps, because I was able to write that resentment and how it affected my life, and I was able to get into my part, and that I wasn't to blame for that. You know, my father's a sick person, you know, and he chose that timing to do those things. But later on, what happened to me, I think, is that it gave me strength. It gave me, you know, strength to do it myself, you know, if I wanted to go to school or whatever I wanted to do. What ended up happening to me is that I met a guy in Sacramento, and when I was 18, and I ran away to Reno with him. My dad was overseas, I think, in Vietnam, and I took off and I went to Reno. And this guy was just my transportation, and he just drank beer. Wasn't that bad, you know. And You know, I got a real good job in Reno, and I had some good skills, you know, from school, and from being on the, you know, really being kind of a streetwise girl, and I got a good job in an advertising agency, and I loved it. It gave me a lot of self-esteem, and we talk about that a lot. I hear alcoholics talk about that a lot from podiums and from AA, open AA meetings, and it gave me some self-esteem and some self-worth, you know, this job did, and it was a creative, you know. I'm a creative person, and you really made me really creative since I've been here. But what I did is that, you know, I loved this job, and it was a great job. And the first year that I was married, the second year I had a daughter, Kimberly. And then 2 years later I had another daughter, Deanna, and this marriage was breaking apart because all the things that were going on in it. You know, I was watching him drink. I was watching him drink that beer and had a beer bar and brought in, you know, and I was watching him do that with his buddies and doing all that kind of stuff. You know what? It didn't bother my husband, you know, but it really bothered me. And that's what qualifies us, I think, to be here in Al-Anon. His drinking bothered me. You know, I don't call him an alcoholic today. He calls himself maybe an alcoholic. But I got revenge on that. Make amends, you get revenge. You know, we moved up to Seattle after that, and when Boeing and the computers were just starting out, and by this time now, you know, I've got these two little girls. I'm in Seattle, and I'm working two jobs, and I had a great job at Boeing, and I was Bubbles the Clown. I started as Bubbles the Clown, and I did different characters, anything to make money, anything to keep the family together. You know, and that gave me a lot of strength, I mean, which really helped me when I came into Al-Anon. It really did. All those things that I was so resentful about really was, you know, was an attribute when I got here. But I went through that marriage, and, you know, he was moving out or I was moving, you know, out or whatever, and I was threatening him all the time, and I was playing those three M's, you know, mother, manager, martyr. And, you know, I just couldn't understand why this marriage was just not working, you know, and I was doing all this work and this job and this marriage, and so finally what I did is that the last time that we were separated, I had another baby, I had a little girl, and she was... you know, about 9 months old, and one night I came home, and I just, it was like New Year's Eve, I'll never forget it. I came home, and I was working as a cocktail waitress, and I was humiliated by working as a cocktail waitress. It was way beneath me, but I had to make some money to help support this family. So what I did is that, and plus, you know, it was kind of exciting working in those bars, you know, really was kind of exciting, but... I came home from this job on New Year's Eve as a cocktail waitress, and during the day I worked a normal job, you know, Miss Society and all this kind of stuff. I was PTA president. That was interesting. I went over to the local little bar, and I got there early, and he wasn't expecting me to be off, and I walked in there, and he was with another woman, a blonde with big boobs. So when you know. This is just not working. It's just not working. But I stuck it out for another 9 months, and finally, you know, close to Christmas time, one night I packed those kids in the car, all three kids and the cat. I don't know why I took the cat. The cat story, Eva. But anyway, they've got a better cat story than I've ever heard. I heard it last night at dinner. It was a great cat story. But anyway, I threw those three kids in this car, and I took the cat, and I took the twin bed mattress. No, I don't know why we do that. Took the litter box, and I took these kids, and I said, I'm going back to Reno. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave Seattle, leave these jobs, and I'm going to go back to Reno, and because this divorce was a terrible divorce. And that's what I did. I jumped in that car, took those three kids in the middle of the night a week before Christmas. You know, I never thought about my kids. You know, thank God for the fellowship, too, and the steps. It's because I'm able to make amends to those kids by being a good mom today. Because you taught me how to be a good mom. You taught me how to be responsible. And you taught me how to say no to my children instead of buying them off, you know. But anyway, I took off and threw those kids in that wagon and went back to Reno. And I got to Mount Shasta, you know, from Seattle. And I got to Mount Shasta, and it was snowing bad. They had a terrible snowstorm. And those three little kids were in that car, and that cat's hanging from the ceiling. And I think, my God. How am I going to get over this mountain? So I remember I opened up the back of that station wagon and I looked for those chains. I couldn't find the chains. I said, oh, heck with it, you know. And I went over that mountain, you know. And that's, you know, I put my children at risk, really at risk, you know, for my self-will and just running riot. And I went over that mountain and all of a sudden, you know, I mean, it was a terrible blizzard. I got down the bottom of that mountain and there was a California Highway Patrolman sitting there. And he looked up, you know, and he was like shocked, you know. And he got out of the car and ran over and he goes, lady, he said, how did you get over that mountain? I said, I don't know. I got over there. He said, determination. That's it, determination. And he said, we closed that mountain 2 hours ago. But that's what I was, just self-will run riot, running away. You know, I did everything the alcoholic did, but I did it sober. But anyway, I got home, and my parents were not happy about this, getting this divorce. And I, went back to Reno again, and I went to work again, 3 jobs, trying to support these kids, did the same thing again, you know. And so for 4 years, I sent my kids back to live with my ex-husband, and I got a clown partner, and we do that on the weekends, and I work as a cocktail waitress in the evening, and I work a day job, and another job. I did everything I possibly could do. And you know, everything was revolved around drinking. Everything revolved around drinking. And I can remember when I started getting real sick, they say that we hit bottom, and not at the same time, I went to work for a lady, and this is really strange because it's not strange. This is what happens. And I went to work for this lady at this little bar in Sparks, and this attorney owned this bar. And she said to me, she had breast cancer, and she said, could you work for me? And I loved this lady. She was a beautiful lady. She was an ex-dancer, and she was a drunk, a bad drunk. And I said, sure, I'd be glad to work. It's like, oh, my God, I'm taking on something else. But anyway, thank God I did, because God's kids meets God's kids. And I went into that bar, and I went to work at that bar, and I don't think I was there a week or whatever. I don't think I was there that long. And all of a sudden, I saw this guy come in to the bar, and he had a blonde with big boobs, and another guy, his lower companion, and I talked about last night. But I said to the bartender, I said, who is that guy? He had a, Brooks Brothers suit on, smoked a cigar, and had a lot of money. And he said, oh, that's Bob Zetz. And he said, he just has this, like 4-star, 5-star dining house and bar, and, that they just built, and very successful guy and all this kind of stuff. And I said, my ticket, my honing in. So I went over there, and, Bob didn't order one drink. He ordered 2 drinks. And she, of course, this lady ordered 2 drinks, and I didn't know if it was his wife or his mother. And I wish it was his mother today. No, I love my mother-in-law in a very special way. But, that merry-go-round call denial happens, because I came back, and then the lower companion was already sleeping on the bar. The guy that, come to find out later, was the guy that put in the carpeting in Bob's restaurant. But anyway, I went back to the bar, and I said, geez, he's really a nice guy. And I can remember the bartender looking at me kind of perplexed, like, you don't even know this guy. And, already you think he's a nice guy. Anyway, I turned around, and all of a sudden I see Bob laying on the bar, on this piano bar. I thought, oh, he's tired. He's been up all night. He's tired, But that started it, And I went there, and I gave him the drinks. They ordered more drinks, and now the blonde's taking his money paying for the drinks, And I didn't get a very good tip that night, because I kept glaring at her, telling her, wow, this is wrong, that's wrong. Already I'm telling her, right? Typical Al-Anon. But, we started that merry-go-round called denial, and the next time Bob came in, he scooted up next to my station. And, Bob's a real quiet, kind of easygoing guy, right? And he said those famous lines, don't I know you from someplace? And I said, oh, I don't know. And we started talking, and come to find out later on, is that Bob was in Seattle at the same time I was in Seattle, and his drinking was getting really bad with his second wife, who he'd been married to. Oh, I've got to hear Bob's story. He's been married to 2 women twice. So I'm really his 5th wife. Is that alcoholic behavior or not? Let's see. Not. But I just instantly, was drawn to this guy. Instantly drawn to this guy. And it didn't make any difference that he didn't have a license. Driver's license. But he said to me, he said, why don't you come on over to the Nugget and have breakfast with me? And so I did. I went over there and I broke a date with this guy, this normie guy that worked for the train, this guy, is a stable guy, has had a home, had a boat, had all those toys, all those things, and I broke a date with that guy to go with him, to watch him play Keno and drink. And I took him home that night, and I dropped him off at his wife's house, and his kids were there, whatever. And we started that merry-go-round called denial. And I'll tell you something, I went to work for him in that bar. Then the mother-in-law, Bob's mom came down with her 5th or 6th or 7th husband. Then all of a sudden, Bob's telling me about his kids. He has 3 kids. At that time, we're teenagers and young adults. I thought, well, you know, these stepkids, well, you know, I'll straighten those kids up. You know, I won't let them steal from the restaurant. I used to tell Bob, they're stealing booze, they're smoking dope in the back, and Bob goes, yeah, I know, it's no problem. You know, I'm like, don't stop my bank yet. And I think the bad night was is that when he had both ex-wives in there, he had his ex-wife in there, his ex-mother-in-law, and then he had his present wife, plus me and all of his kids, and who they were fooling around with, and I don't know. I mean, it was just like such a menagerie, and that's how we lived. You know, that's how we lived. And so finally it came to that point, you know, where Bob and I moved in together. We got rid of the wife, and I started in 13 months. 13 months, it went downhill fast. I swear to God, 13 months is where I started doing all the things that we all do, and I hear many times from the podium. And I was thinking of Tom today, last night we were talking, and what Tom's profession was, and I almost ended up in one of his jails. But I did that, too, in sobriety. But what I started doing is I thought, you know, I'm going to fix this situation. I really am. I loved him so much. I love Bob so much. You know, we do love alcoholics so much, and I'm so blessed by that, because what happened is that I started doing those things. You know, I started waiting up for him. You know, I'd stay at the restaurant. I'd drink with him. I'd not drink with him. I'd be under him, over him, or whatever. And I started moving furniture around in the middle of the night, you know, that when he'd come in, Whittlesey Cab would bring him home, because I did do some things before, you know, he stopped drinking. And I'd move all the furniture around, and Bob would come in from the house, and the cab would let him off, and he'd come in the house, he'd fall over the furniture, thought he was in the wrong room, and he'd leave. And then I'd have to get dressed and go find him again. You know, but Reno, thank God, was a small town. And, you know, I'd call all the bars. Every night I'd call all the bars. You know, I'd call the Siamese room, and I kept calendars. I kept track of where Bob was, you know, certain times, and did all that. And then, you know, I read this book, and this book said that it was kind of like not a feminist book, but it was like, you know, if you just dress pretty and wear makeup and do your hair and have, you know, midnight dinners and do all this kind of stuff, that'll keep him home, right? So I thought, oh, okay, fine, that's special. So what I did is that, you know, I'd lit candles and I'd have wine. Bob hated wine. He liked Tanqueray and VO. And I'd leave the restaurant early, and I ordered this Fredericks of Hollywood outfit, you know. Oh, some of you have those, huh? Don't fit me anymore. But, you know, and you know, those Fredericks of Hollywood outfits, and they are like, you know, they have a string here, tassels here, and they have a G-string, like the thong they have now or whatever. And then it had that black, long, see-through, you know, net, you know, with the black fur that molts all over the house, you know. And then I smoked at that time, so I had a French cigarette holder, you know, with a cigarette in it. And then we remember we teased our hair, you know, well, we called it ratted, because I had rats, I think, growing in there. And I just teased that hair all over the place and went to the beauty shop four times a week or whatever. And I wore makeup 24 hours. I never took it off. That's what the book said. I mean, I wanted to look good all the time. So you could imagine what I looked like. JR, my son, said, God, you look great for Halloween like that. In fact, we went to an Al-Anon Halloween party. That's how I dressed before. I went in my robe and my nightgown. And then I had those Cinderella slippers. I don't, the women can identify with those. You know, those plastic slippers, those high heels with the pom-poms on top, you know, had those. And they were great. They were fabulous. I'd prance around the house waiting for Bob to come home, for Whittlesey Cab to bring him home. And they'd bring him home, and I'd open up that door, and that cab driver would look at me, and I'd just like, I forgot that I had that on, you know. You got to put on that Al-Anon robe, you know. And the taxi driver said, well, here he is, Mrs. Zetz. And I'd say, well, here's $5. Take him back where you found him. And he would, you know. And then I'd have to get dressed and go out and look for Bob again. And then I'd go to Harrah's at the blackout bar, you know. And, I mean, I'd tell you, you could not see anybody down there. All you could do is smell aqua velva and all that. You know, I mean, it was unreal. And I'd go down in that blackout bar, and I'd drug him out of that bar, and I'd drug him up the steps, and I'm yelling and screaming at him, it's not Bob. And this guy's looking at me, and he goes, God, you know. He said, no wonder Bob drinks. I said, well, you're drinking too. What the hell is going on here? Where's your wife? He goes, I don't know. Let's get together. Probably looking at me down at the maid. And it was absolute craziness. But this one night, I tell you, this was it. It was in October, And September, I mean, and I was just, I was absolutely beside myself, and I couldn't figure it out. You know, I asked Bob, please take out the garbage. I was asking him to do all these things, you know, and he was going to work. And so this one night, what I did is I went out during the day, put my Al-Anon bathrobe on, and I went out during the day, and I raked up all the leaves, you know, playing that little martyr. And when, because we lived in the right neighborhood, my God. And I raked up all the leaves and put all the leaves around and went back into the house, and I waited for Bob that night. And finally, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, Bob came home. And I had my daughter living with me at that time, Ambie, and she, there was craziness. She loved Bob. She absolutely loved Bob. Bob would take her to the petting zoo, and he'd drink in the Black Angus and thing, and she'd feed all the animals, you know, until the goat ate his food. But anyway, Bob came home, and they left him on the porch again. And that was, you know, it was like the last hurrah. And I came out there in my little Frags of Hollywood outfit, and I threw him off that porch. I mean, I threw him off that porch. And I threw him down on the ground, and I covered him up with those leaves, and I stuck that cigar in his mouth, and I thought, burn, baby, burn. Hear that song, burn. And I went back in the house, and I felt great. You know, those Cinderella slippers and that Fredericks of Hollywood outfit, and, you know, my hair all teased up and all this jazz. And all of a sudden, you know, I thought, well, I have a little moment of compassion, pre-Al-Anon compassion. So I went out and took the cigar out of his mouth. Thank God he was loaded with VO, right? And he had enough antifreeze in him so that he wouldn't freeze. And I came back in the house and knocked on the door. I thought, oh, good, now we can have a meaningful conversation. And about his drinking and what he's doing to us and to his life. And I went to the door in my little Fredericks of Hollywood outfit. I think I had the robe off by this time. And I had that cigarette in my hand, and this guy that was the security guard lived in a little car right across the street from us because he guarded Harold Smith's house, who owned Harold's Club. And he saw what was going on, right? And he knocked on the door and he said, excuse me. I said, who are you? He goes, I'm the gentleman that's the security across the street. He said, did you know that there's a gentleman down on the lawn? I said, of course I do. When the hell are you? Get the hell off my property. I'm screaming and yelling at this guy, and this guy's like, my God. And he starts shaking his head like, doesn't she realize how sick this is? And I can remember him walking off, you know. And I went back in, and I had a cup of coffee because Amy got up early. And I, you know, I felt, I had that funny feeling. I can't describe that feeling that I had. It's like, you know that this is wrong. This is not the way normal people in the neighborhood live, you know, laying on the lawn, their husbands, only naked in the back seat of Volkswagens. But anyway, so what I did is that I sat at the breakfast table. My little daughter came out. And she had that look on her face, and then, you know, she had to make her cereal, and I was smoking the cigarette, and she asked where Bob was, and I didn't say, and so she had to go off early to school, and I put my robe on, and I was watching her walk down the sidewalk, meet a little friend, Leslie Conklin, and all of a sudden the leaves moved. You know, and Amby saw those leaves move, and she knew who was underneath those leaves. But she gave us that look, you know, that when we're hitting bottom. She gave me that look like, Mom, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because she loved Bob, you know. Kids love alcoholics, you know. Adults love alcoholics. We love alcoholics. But anyway, what I did is that I went into that bathroom, and that's when I had a spiritual awakening. I said, you know, I can't live like this. Please, God, help me. Just help me. And that was my spiritual experience. And how he helped me was that the next night, I got Bob off the lawn, You know, I went to the restaurant and I worked and I went home and I had to take the babysitter home and there again, you know, had another spiritual awakening. And I left Ambie home alone while I could take the babysitter home. And he lived in Sparks. And so I was racing and I got to a light. And when I got to the light, it was red. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning and I was impatient. And I read about a lot of patients this week and I was impatient and I went through that light. There was nobody around, right, except a cop. And he pulled me over, and at that time he was new to Reno, and what I told him didn't matter. I said, everybody's drunk at my restaurant, plus the narcs are, and they're selling drugs down there and doing all this stuff, and he didn't care. He said, just get out of the car. And the women I sponsor, and they gave me a license plate that says, get in the car, in Al-Anon. So I don't have to get out of the car anymore. But anyway, I got out of the car, and he did a sobriety test on me. I passed that, but then he made some remarks, and what I did is that I said something to him that wasn't real nice, and before I knew it, they had me in handcuffs, and they put threw me in jail, the Reno jail. They threw me in a padded cell. And you know, you do get one phone call. You do get one phone call. Today, these Al-Anons tell me, these girls I sponsor, they call me up and they go, he's called me 10 times, you know. I said, how did they do that? How did they get away with it? You know, get one call. And I went to the phone and I called up the restaurant and finally Bob came to the phone. You know how you're waiting and finally Bob comes to the phone and I said, Bob, you got to help me. I got thrown in jail. And Bob said, you know what, Betty Ann, you always figure everything out. Figure this out. Aha. Okay. And, you know, I was devastated. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because when I went into that padded cell, you know, that's when that was it. I said, dear God, just help me. Get me out of this. I'll do anything. I will do anything. And I think my higher power, my understanding, said, okay, Betty Ann, these are the things that you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go to that Al-Anon that your brother-in-law and sister-in-law shared with you down in, you know, in San Diego when I went down there. And I called. You know, I came home that morning and then something changed for me. And I called that Al-Anon that Saturday morning and I was just absolutely a wreck. And Bob had been out all night. And I called that Al-Anon and they said to me, you know, they said, this lady talked to me for 2.5 hours on the phone and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful. Even today with our central offices having a hard time and our telephone services because of the recession, you know, that's what we support. We support our central office. We keep that line of communication always open for the Al-Anon who's still suffering and the alcoholic who's still suffering and those Al-Ateens that are still suffering. And so that's why the group thing is so important to me, because that first meeting that I went to Ning was a Sunday night at the VA hospital, and she said, whatever you could do to get your husband there, whatever you could do. She said, do you believe he really has a drinking problem? I said, oh, yeah, he does. And I told her all about it. And so what I did is that, you know, when Bob called me at 5 o'clock in the morning and he was in a blackout, which I didn't know anything about, and he talked about that last night, and I couldn't believe it. He sounded different. There was something different about him. And he said to me, you know, he said he was crying. He never did that before. He was crying and slobbering. And I said, Bob, where are you? You know, and he didn't know where he was. You know, he said, they took a lot of my money, so that means he was gambling. He was losing a lot of money. And so you can't come home. I said, you know, that's just impossible this time. And I said, I love you and I care for you, but you can't come home like this. And I hung up that phone, and that was the first time that I hadn't packed my bags and gone down to the corner of the street and told Bob I was leaving and called him up and said, you know, I've gone. And Bob says, good. Hang up that phone. You know, they don't care. You know, Bob said if I did the things that he did, my bags would have been packed out in that porch a long time ago. But the love that we have for the alcoholic, and Bill Wilson talks about that. People like us and that are praying for alcoholics and that stick in there and wait for our miracle to happen. You know, and our miracle did happen. Because, you know, when he did come home that morning, I said, Bob, you've got to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said he knew that something was different about me then. And it was. It was different for me that morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, that night we went to the restaurant. We went and saw Liberace because Bob couldn't go to a meeting that night after he called AA because the phone was busy. And then he finally got through to Mary D. And we went in Reno and we went to see Liberace. And I watched Bob drink Coca-Cola and never did that. The next night we went to the VA hospital. I wore everything I hadn't hocked. You know, I wore a dress and gloves and a hat. And we went up to the VA hospital. Bob wore his Brooks Brothers suit and went in there. And this huge room, and the AAs came in their VA hospital robes, and they were all smoking and drinking coffee and coughing and doing all this. And I'm like, what have I gotten him into? Oh, this is terrible. So we sat away from that table, you know. But I wanted to find that Al-Anon lady that I had talked to. And I can remember right after the meeting, they held hands, and they wanted us to come in and hold hands. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to hold hands with that lady with blue hair. Oh, my God. You know, and that Kmart shoes. Oh, my God. I shop at Kmart now. But anyway, you know, but I was arrogant. It says in our literature, we're smug, arrogant, and self-righteous. And I don't know where that came from, you know, because I'm a loving human being. But anyway, I went over there and I found that lady, and this wonderful lady, like Eva here. Yeah, that's it, Eva. But anyway, this wonderful lady, you know. I said, I'm Betty Ann. She goes, yes, I know. Oh, well, isn't that special? And she said, you come into the meeting tomorrow night. And she said, you can bring Bob. I introduced Bob to her, and Bob wasn't real too impressed with her husband, this Al-Anon husband, this man. I talked to Bill last night, and he said, I think the reason they asked me is because I'm a man. I said, no, it's because you get a lousy talk. something happened to us. You know, something happened to us. When I went to that first Al-Anon meeting, we went to a little club called the Alano Club in Reno, and they had the AA meeting that Bob went back to. It was called Puke on the Shoes Group. I said, well, this is real classy. Puke on the Shoes Group. Wonderful. And then they had the Al-Anons in the little front, you know, porch with the pool table with the plywood boards up top and the light bulb hanging down and the couches that all have rips in them. You've been to those clubs, haven't you? I think they're wonderful. I'm so grateful that, you know, Bob got sober in Reno. And, you know, that's what really happened to us. That's what, you know, is at the end of, you know, at the end of the meeting, the Al-Anon meeting, they said, would you like to share, Betty Ann? I said, of course. You know, so I told them everything. And they just sat there and nodded their head and laughed and clapped and did all this. And I just thought, these people are crazy. You know, but what happened to me that I know that happens to every Al-Anon and every alcoholic and every Al-Teen and preteen that I know throughout the world today happens. Because once you held my hand and you said that prayer, and I can remember the guys, there was a lot of men in this meeting too, and I thought that was very bizarre, you know, and especially this old guy, Bill, God bless his soul, because he told me, he said, you're so sick, Betty Ann, you have to go to meetings, you know, he said, just like the alcoholic, you need 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, oh, okay, but there's only 2 Al-Anon meetings in town at that time. He said, I don't care, go to every meeting, you know. But we held hands and something really happened to me. Something really happened to me when we held hands and said that Lord's Prayer. I'm so grateful for that Lord's Prayer. Forgive those who trespass against us. You know, it gave me hope. You guys gave me hope that day. First year in Al-Anon, you know, my kids, you know, were living with their dad, and it was real bad. We lost that business in the second year. But the first year we had I got pregnant and had my son, J.R., and I don't know how much time. I think I've taken all the time. It's okay. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, right? But what I did is that we had our son, J.R. You threw us, you know, baby showers, you know, for which nothing ever like that ever happened to me. You know, you watched me go to meetings. You got me into service. You had me, you know, cleaning ashtrays. I said, I don't smoke anymore. Why do I have to clean these ashtrays? And Dottie just looked and said, because it's really good for your growth. I said, yeah, well, okay, you know. And then she'd say, you know, you know, you come early to this meeting, stay late. Why don't you go to coffee with us? I went, oh, okay, we'd do that. Bob was going to AA now, and he was doing great. Everything was wonderful, but we were losing everything. Our business, you know, nobody's drinking anymore. Nobody's coming to our bar drinking, you know. But a lot of people that came to that bar that drank are in AA and Al-Anon now. You know, so that was the gift that we got, And through that, it was really rough. You know, the first year we had JR, and my doctor was so happy I was in Al-Anon. God, he was happy. But I kept telling him, you know, Bob's an Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I don't worry about Bob. I worry about you, you know. And today that doctor gives literature, you know, to all the women, you know, that come into his office, and because they gave me the little record, and the Al-Anon said, we'll shut her up. We'll have her do service. We'll do public information. So I used to take the little record around to the radio stations and do all that. Second year in Al-Anon, I'm pregnant again. You know, and I'm thinking, my God, he told me that, you know, he was sterile. you know, it's like that story. You've heard that story, I'm sure. I was telling it last night at dinner. I said, you know, about the new Al-Anon that comes in, you know, and she's talking to the old timer, and she said, how can you tell if the alcoholic is lying? And she kind of sits back and kind of smiles and laughs, and she goes, well, honey, when his lips are moving. I was pregnant again. And again, you threw me a baby shower and did all those things for us and went to the hospital with us. I had an emergency cesarean, and my doctor said, my God, Betty Ann, there's not one, there's two. And I had twin girls. And, you know, that's when the program, I mean, the fellowship of the program, we can do all these things and have these wonderful 25 years conventions. But, you know, being a member of that group and being a member in Al-Anon and going to those open AA speaker meetings, you know, all the AAs were there, the Al-Anons were there. And, I mean, the hospital, like we talked about last time, they were crazy. They said, where are all these people coming from, you know? But through that experience, I mean, you know, St. Mary's opened up a detox there. And through that experience, they have an Al-Anon meeting there at that hospital because of people like Bob and I and you guys. I mean. But anyway, 3 months later, I had my girls back. I'd kidnapped my girls and from my ex-husband, and ended up in jail in Placerville because of it. And when I was pregnant with the twins, and didn't realize that when you take your kids across the state line, and whether it's legal or not, is that when your ex-husband's drinking, you're in trouble, and especially with his wife drinking. And so it's so good to make amends to them. You know, I'm so grateful I made amends to my ex-husband and my ex-wife-in-law, as my wife says. But, you know, because we have an okay relationship today. They still live in Seattle. I still live, you know, in Los Angeles. But what happened is that we kidnapped those kids, and our sponsors told us that it was okay to do that. And one night I was coming home from an Al-Anon meeting with my stepdaughter, and we lived in a little town called Georgetown out in the woods. And then because we'd lost that restaurant, we moved down there just outside of Reno, and we had no place else, and we were living with it was my mother-in-law's property. And we lived in this little tiny house. And I always carried it around with my One Day at a Time book. And I carried my One Day at a Time book with me all the time until it got so bad that it was so precious to me that I finally kept it at home. But I had my One Day at a Time book, and I came home, and there was cops there, and the Placerville sheriff. And they took me, you know, pregnant and all, and they took me to the Placerville jail in the middle of the night. And, you know, the first person I called was my sponsor. I said, "I'm in jail." And she said, "That's interesting." And I said, and they took my kids, you know, they took the girls. And I said, "We're not going to be able to prove this point." But when I was sitting in the holding part, and here I was pregnant with those twins, and I was sitting there in the holding part, all of a sudden I saw the sheriffs bring in this drunk. And this guy wore a Brooks Brothers suit. And they brought him in there, and they threw him in a padded cell, and they beat the hell out of him. I saw what alcoholism did. I can remember holding on to that One Day at a Time book, because they wouldn't take that away. And I just prayed for that guy. Oh, please, God, don't let him hit him again. The Rodney King thing was nothing compared to that. And what happened is that I went into that little cell, and about 6 o'clock in the morning, I was reading the One Day at a Time book. I was terribly, terribly sick, and all of a sudden I heard in the bars, and these people, you know, across from me in the cell, and they said, "Come over here, come over here. Tell the matron, come over here." I had a spiritual experience that morning. So the matron came, and she goes, "What's going on?" And they said, "We want her over here." I thought, oh, my God, women in prison. And I said, "Well, I'm big and pregnant. What are they going to do?" So they took me into that cell. It was a huge room. I had my One Day at a Time book with me. And I sat down at this table, and they said, "You're sick." I said, "Yes, I am." They had black marketed some food there, and they fed me. They said, "Because you can't eat this jail food, honey." And they fed me. And I sat there, and they said, "What are you doing in here?" And I said, "I kidnapped my girls." And they said, "Oh, really? That's interesting." I said, "What are you guys doing in here?" One told me every one of them were in there because a direct result of alcoholism. My husband, and then, you know, didn't come home, so I wrote a check at the grocery store, and I write checks at grocery stores to feed my kids, and he's out drinking, and they threw me in jail. One lady was in jail there because she hired a helicopter. You might have heard this story. She hired a helicopter and then to get the alcoholic out of jail, out in the yard, and the helicopter came down and got the guy, and they caught her. And she was there. And another one, because, you know, this husband that she was married to, who was a drug addict, and then had beaten her children, and they put her in jail and let him go and put the children with him. I mean, those are the stories that I heard in that jail that morning. And, you know, I shared with him that One Day at a Time book, and I shared with him. I said, "You know what, my husband's a drunk too." And they go, "Really?" You know, I said, "But he's sober in Alcoholics Anonymous." And we started sharing about that. And out of those 5 women that were in that jail that taught me humility, because one of the things that they taught me is that they had an open shower and an open commode. And what they did is they took that wool scratchy blanket and they held it up so that I could take a shower. They gave me dignity. Those are our kind of people. Those are our people that gave me dignity. And one woman out of that group stayed in Al-Anon, and we'd lost contact with. But one woman went to Al-Anon out of that group. But the dignity that you gave me is that when those twins were 3 months old and they were only weighed 2 pounds, you know, when they were born, they were in the hospital for 6 weeks. Guess who took me? And I had that cesarean. Guess who took me to the hospital? You guys did. Guess who drove? You guys did. My sponsor came up from Auburn. You guys took care of us. You know, my parents couldn't handle that. My dad was so excited about those twin girls. I think he felt, you know, so much remorse about my mother, you know, death. My father felt so much guilt about that, and his drinking was so bad. And so what he did is that, you know, I took those twins down there as soon as they were out of the hospital. My father just beamed. He was just so excited. But that one morning I was up all night with my twins, and my girls were there, and they were going to Alateen because Bob said, you know, if I got to go to AA, you got to go to Alateen until you want to go. And they did, thank God, those 2 older girls. I went into the room that morning, and I bathed that babies, and I went back to feed one of them. The kids went off to school, and Bob was off to work. He had a job now. back into the construction field, what he does best. And I went in and I picked up that baby, and she was dead. And she died a crib death. And, you know, the first thing that went through my mind when I picked that baby up is that I said, oh, please, God, just give her breath. I will do anything. And what flashed through my mind was that the same thing that I used to say when I was a kid, please, God, bring my daddy home and not have him hit my mother. You know, please, God, bring Bob home. You know, please, God, you know, all those kind of things went through my mind. And what I did, the first person I called, and I called an Al-Anon, I said, I called Dottie, and she was our delegate at the time, and I said, Dottie, please help me, you know. And she said, we'll be right there, Betty Ann. And I said, I can't go to the district meeting. I was in shock. I said, I can't go to the district meeting. I said, I think my baby's dead. She said, we'll be right there. And thank God for that, because they were right there. My sponsor came up, and you all were there. And even our normie friend, who was a terrible, terrible gambler, came in and he goes, you know, this is the shit. But he saw the love and the warmth that was in our house. You fed us. And my kids came home from school, and, you know, I can remember Deanna. You know, she just got crazy, my Deanna did. And those Alateens took her, and they went out on her bike, and they went up on top of the hill, and they sat, those Alateens did with her. And, you know, when the funeral came, and they had a mass, and thank God we were back into our faith again, and, you know, all the priests that drank in our restaurant were getting sober. And, but they came up, you know. One of the priests that got sober came up from Las Vegas and did the mass. My parents came up, you know, my dad and my stepmom, and they came up to that. My dad, I'll never forget it, was standing behind me, and you were standing beside me. And he was so overwhelmed by that, is that the next morning my stepmother called me, and she said, Betty Ann, she said, I don't know where your dad is. He stayed out all night after the funeral home. He went over to the funeral home and saw that baby. She said, he's never come back. She said, I think he's drunk. I said, you know, I can understand that. I could really understand that, because the AA taught me that. I wouldn't have to live with that guilt, that type of guilt, you know. And so what we did is that the limo came and we went up to the cemetery, and I got out, I'll never forget getting out of that limo. And, you know, a gentleman like Leo, you know, came up to me and he said, you know, Betty Ann, I'll be your dad today. And he took one side of me and Bob was on the other side. And I can remember that, you know, that you walked us through that. And we went to Texas after that. Bob, you know, had a job, a deal. We went to Texas, and we spent 2 years in Texas, like I said, with Gracie and David, and belonged to the Louisville group there, and I loved it, absolutely loved it, really did the steps. Because, see, the first year I was in the program, I did the steps in 2 weeks. It was great. I went back to me and said, I did all the steps. They went, yeah, sure, Ben. Great. And they clapped, and I said, but the only problem is, I said, I need a spiritual experience. They said, you are our spiritual experience. You know. But I breezed through Dallas. I mean, I loved Dallas, did my clown stuff, did all that stuff, worked at the central office and went to the Preston Club and went to Town North and had a ball, just had a ball. And then it came time and then when things got bad, you know, Bob's little deal, and we left and we went to Los Angeles. And how we got to Los Angeles was via New Orleans. You know, we went to the International. We had no money, Bob had no job, and had a deal that a guy had given him a check that he stopped payment on. And, but, you know, 12-step work comes in. Because, see, I'd been going to this hairdresser there in Louisville, and this girl had been mentioning things that were going on with her husband. And I said, yeah, things like that used to happen to my husband, too. And she said, oh, really? You know, and I said, yeah. And I said, well, my husband drank those kind of things that he did. She goes, oh, my gosh, you know. She goes, well, what do you do about it? I said, well, I go to Al-Anon. And she goes, well, tell me about it. And I told her about it. So the night before we were leaving for New Orleans, and we'd made all the arrangements for all five of our children, and so we can go drive to Shreveport and then down to New Orleans. Something really special happened. You never know. And Bob says, I don't know how we're going to do it. We have no money, but we had one night paid at the Marriott, the Al-Anon headquarters in New Orleans. And he said, we've saved, you know, for a couple years of this. So that's what we did. You know, in the middle of the night, I got a phone call, and it was from Miss Karen. I'll never forget this. And she called me up and she said, help me, please help me. My husband came home and he threw me out with no clothes on. And she said, I just, you know, threw a coat after me. So Bob and I went and we picked her up and we brought her over to our house, and that's all she had was a big long overcoat, London fog. But she came into our house, and the next morning, you know, we went back and got her some clothes and all that. And she said, you guys, aren't you going to New Orleans for that AA thing? And we said, yes, we are. He said, you want to go? And she goes, yes, I'd love to go. So her first meeting was in New Orleans at the Lois Wilson Luncheon. And that's another grace that we've had to do, had the privilege of being, is with Lois a number of times. And we were host and hostess for her out in Palm Springs with her and Ann Bingham, who was in our area, and who is the co-founder of Al-Anon with Lois. And but anyway, we had a wonderful time. But you know what? Karen never stayed. But Bob and I did. You know, I've stayed in Al-Anon. And you know, many times, I mean, when my friends come out from Texas, I always ask, have you seen Karen? No, but we've heard about Karen. She had a couple babies. She thought that'd fix it. You know, and he's still doing what he's supposed to be doing. You know, and you know what? Thank God that they're still doing what they're supposed to be doing, because that gives me, you know, the grace to be here with you today. You know, when we left Texas and we left, you know, went to Los Angeles, because we met people from L.A. and New Orleans that shared with us, you know, they said, well, come out to L.A. We got work out there. People, I mean, just by that grace, you know, come on out. So we did. Bob went out there first and went to meetings, and he's like, Alabama says he met Alabama, and you remember Alabama, and God bless her soul, and she's the one that says, you know, if you don't have the best meeting in the world, well, you better make it the best meeting in the world. And he was telling me all these wonderful things, and so we went out to Los Angeles, and we moved up there in Agora, up by where the fires were, and that's another thing that happened to us this last week. And I was telling Tom last night, and some of the people here, we were talking about the fires, and they were right between us and burning up the canyon, and a lot of Al-Anons that I sponsor live down there in that canyon. And in fact, they came up to the meeting on Friday night, and they told me, they said, isn't it strange? She said, none of our houses were affected, and we were able to help other people get their horses out and get their animals out and protect property and do all that kind of stuff. And she said, all the drunks' houses were burned down. But, you know, that's what happens in our fellowship, and I'm sure that I've gone on in exactly too long. But I want to tell you some of the things that have happened to my kids, and then I'll close with this and let you guys go eat lunch. But my daughter is 31 years old today. And, you know, I had a tough time with Kimberly because, you know, she was the oldest of my five children. And Kimberly took over that role of the mother. You know, she took over my responsibilities, and she hated me for it. But thank God, I think she went to Alateen because she went into Al-Anon. And Kimberly got a sponsor, you know, and she, you know, Kimberly and I have a good relationship today. Not the best relationship today, but we have a good relationship today. And about 10 years ago when she came out from Dallas, you know, she met a guy at a baseball game, a Pacific Group baseball game, and she looked up at this guy, this big, tall, lanky, real laid-back guy, a golfer. And she looked back at him, we were sitting on the benches of this ball game up in Oxnard, and she goes, Mom, she says, that's the guy I'm going to marry. I went, oh, my God, she's going to marry an alcoholic? You know, he's sober. And she did. She married him, you know, she forced him to make a free decision, too. A lot like me. They've been married now, it's almost 7 years. But when they were married 3 years, and she came to me and she goes, Mom, I'm pregnant. And I was just so grateful. Made her a nice person. But I was really grateful for that, you know, that she was pregnant. And they were living in Los Angeles. She was working in a pharmacy, and she's always been, you know, that oldest kid, you know, the best kid. And she said, you know, we're going to have a baby. And 2 months later, when my daughter was 4 months pregnant, and then she lost this baby. And she called me up, and she said, Mom, she said, I lost this baby. And she started crying. And, you know, you taught me how to be a mom. You taught me how to be there for my kids when it's really important to be there. And, you know, I shared with her, and I shared that pain. And about 4 months ago, my daughter was up. We were at a golf tournament with the Pacific Group, and she came up to me, and she looked at me straight in the eyes, and she said, you're going to become a grandmother again. And she said, I'm so excited, Mother. I said, I am so excited, too. And she moved to Reno. She went to Reno and got pregnant. You know, she went back home to Reno. That's what she wanted to do. She was born there. She was raised there, and then we took her away from there. And so she and her husband went back there. And they're very active in Al-Anon and AA there, and they're doing great there. My other daughter, Deanna, you know, how she acted out about alcoholism and Al-Anonism, mostly Al-Anonism, is she became the bookworm. You know, she became the perfect student, and she studied. She went to the University of Washington for 3 years. She got a degree out of them, and to bring the nuclear reactor up. She's the only woman licensed in the United States to bring the nuclear reactor up. Then she recruited herself to USC, and she graduated from USC and then with honors. And now she's getting a master's from USC, and she works for the gas company, and she won't fix my bill. Some secret thing. Has a big management job, and she's going to be, you know, she wants to buy a yacht. Oh God, buy property, you know. But I mean, she is the light of my life, and she's really a great gal. And she's fully self-supporting, declining our contribution. But then there's my 25-year-old Ambie, that little one that was in that house, you know, that watched all that stuff going on for those 13 months or whatever. And, you know, that Ambie is going to be 26 years old, and I have a granddaughter that's 7 years old. And she's an unwed mother. You know, and I could say that from the podium here. Because my daughter, Ning, when she came back from Seattle, she went to live with my ex-husband again. And then when she was 16 years old, he called me up and he said, "You take her." You know, she was acting out. And she didn't drink, she didn't smoke dope, didn't do all that kind of stuff. She just acted out from this disease of Al-Anonism and alcoholism. And she came back to live with us, and we told her, "You have to go to Alateen. You know, you have to go back to Alateen, you got to do those things." And finally, she wouldn't do that, and we had to ask her to leave our house. And then when, you know, after she had been gone from our house for about 9 months, and then she called up, and I told her, I said, "Don't call collect." You know, I said, "I won't take a collect call from you, Ambie, anymore." And I told her I loved her. I sent her a letter, and I told her how much I loved her and I cared for her, and I would help her help herself. I would help her help herself. That's what Bob and I told her. And so one day I got a phone call, and she called me up, and it wasn't collect. And she said, "Mom," she said, "I really need help." My daughter has a lot of pride. She never cries, and it has a lot of pride. And I said, "Ambie," I said, "you know, what can I do to help you?" And she said, "Mom," she said, "I need to come home." And we were living up north again in California. And I said, "You know what, Ambie, let me call you right back. Give me the phone number." I said, "I've got to make a call." She goes, "I know who you're going to call. You're going to call your sponsor." I said, "That's right." And that's what sponsorship did for me. Because I was able to call my sponsor, and I was able to, you know, ask her, "What do I do now?" She said, "You could do what the big book tells you to do. You can bring her home for 2 weeks, get her well, and then you need to, you know, take care of that business." And I did that. We brought her home, and we moved back down south, and she came to live with us. And finally, you know, she told me that she was pregnant, and I said, "Ambie," I said, "you know, you need to do something, you know, about this for your own self-esteem." And so what she did is that an Al-Anon member told me about St. Anne's, and we took her to St. Anne's maternity home in downtown Los Angeles. And Ambie went to that maternity home, and she stayed there with those girls, started an Al-Anon meeting there, and did very, very well. Today, she's self-supporting, declining my contributions most of the time. But that granddaughter, just ask me for anything, she's got it, you know. And she never does, you know. She's a grace, too. And then J.R. and Amy. You know, J.R., my son, because of Alateen and because of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, Bob takes him to the yard when he's here. But last year, and then he had a rough time in school, really a rough time. And we were fighting with him and Amy and the other twin. And finally, you know, we learned here just to let go. That's what you told me to do. You said, "Let go. Let God. Love your children enough within the fellowship." Because I wanted my kids to do everything perfect, you know. God, I was Mrs. Al-Anon. You know, they got to be, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Al-Anon here. And, but they have their own path, and that's very, very true. They have their own path. And their path was that my son went up to Lake Tahoe. He went to work up there at a ski lodge, and he's, you know, he's a snowboarder. And he loves to do that. He came home this summer, went to work for his dad, made $31 an hour, made me sick. And, you know, saved all his money, and he's going back, and he's going to snowboard this winter. And I've allowed him the grace to do that. You know, I really have. And it's not that I've allowed him to do that. I've learned a different Alanese language that you've taught me to do. I love my kids unconditionally. You know, and I could talk to my kids today in a different language than I used to do before. And then my daughter Amy, a couple weeks ago, and then she got a call, and then from a photographer. They wanted to do a shoot with her, and I took her out there, and I watched this beautiful young lady who wants to be a model. And she wants to be a model for all the right reasons. She wants to make enough money, and then so she doesn't have to live off of us, you know. But anyway, she did this, and I was sitting there, and I thought, it never happened without Al-Anon. It would never happen without AA. And then I went over to Clancy's 35th party and the 30-year party of my husband's group, and I sat there, and I cried the whole time, just to be so grateful for this greatest fellowship that we have. And talking last night to the guys, I just realized what a connection that we all have together, and that connection is that it just cannot be broken. It just doesn't happen this way. And so if you're concerned today about your children or your grandchildren or about a husband or a wife or whatever is going on, I tell you, Al-Anon is the panacea for all of it. This is the place to be. You know, I don't want to be any other place except here with you. And I just want to close the thing, and I know I've gone on terribly, terribly long this morning, And I'm really grateful for all of you sticking around. And I watched some of you who went to the bathroom. And I want to thank you again for having Bob and I here and being part of this. And I know that we're going to have a wonderful convention for the rest of the weekend because the other speakers are not going to talk as long as I do. But I want to leave you with a prayer that my husband's sponsor gave to us. And it says, "Dear God, help me to accept the seemingly bad as well as the good which is necessary for my growth." And that is so true. All the seemingly bad things that have happened in my life, I've been able to make amends to. I've been able to make amends to my family. I've been able to make amends to my parents. And by making amends to them is that I physically leave them alone. You know, I send them postcards of my trips or wherever we go, whatever. I send them pictures of my kids. I do those things, that you've taught me to do here as a daughter. You've taught me to be a daughter. You've taught me to be a wife. You've taught me to be a mother. You've taught me to be a good friend. You've taught me to be a good member of Al-Anon. And today that is true. You've taught me to be a good sponsor, you know, and to do all those things that we've learned here. But I think the greatest grace that you've given me is that you've given me my life. I've always heard alcoholics talk about that, but you've given me a physical, spiritual, and emotional healthy life that I take wherever I go throughout this great fellowship. I take that with me on a daily basis. And I just want to close also with the last night I was sitting around the table and was talking, and Chip's wife, Bonnie, was sitting there. And I went in last night, you know, and I kind of take a little bit of an inventory at night before I go to sleep. And I took a 10th step. And, you know, I thought to myself, I need to make amends to her because, you know, she was sitting there very quietly listening to me and to all of us. And I realized, I was talking to her about Al-Anon. She was telling me about her children and them just getting back from Guam and the feelings that they had. You know, how special that was to me. You know, how in my heart, you know, that there's still hope for my family that's in the service. You know, there's still hope in me that an Al-Anon such as Bonnie me could be here today, you know, and be that example to her children. Or like Linda here today, you know, from Los Angeles, that just by that golden chance is that you don't miss your chance. God bless you all. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend.